Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and in this episode, we have the privilege of hosting John Barry, a distinguished Army veteran, accomplished trial lawyer, and CEO of Barry Law. With a 20-year military career, including service as an infantry officer in Bosnia and a company commander in Iraq, John brings a wealth of leadership and experience to the table. Beyond the courtroom, he is dedicated to empowering veterans through his podcast, Veteran Led, inspiring them to apply military lessons in civilian life. So welcome to the show, John. I'm really glad to have you here.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Scott. It's an honor.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just jump right into it. Let's talk about kind of some of the lessons that we all have learned during our time in the military, especially in leadership roles, right? How do you think that these lessons can be applied to civilian businesses and even, you know, day-to-day life and community, in your community, in your household, different things like that? How are these things transferred from the military to the civilian side?
The short version is, if you served even one enlistment, you have the basic skills to succeed, right? To survive, thrive, and dominate in your field, because most civilians lack those skills. And it was, this is one of these epiphanies, that took me a long time to realize, a lot of struggling before I got to the point where I realized that this is true. So my father, a Vietnam veteran, defended the 5th Special Forces in Vietnam. There's a murder case, it was called the Green Beret Affair, and he was successful, and he came back and he was practicing law, and he continued to help veterans with issues, whether it was a divorce or say a DUI, something related to drugs or alcohol, or crimes of violence. And it all came back to post-traumatic stress. But at the time, we didn't call it post-traumatic stress disorder. It was called shell shock. The VA was constantly denying our Vietnam veterans. I mean, it's bad enough the way we treated them when they came back, but a lot of them came back and no one was there to help them. And my dad was representing a veteran, we'll call him Tommy, who was homeless, living under a bridge in a major city. And Tommy was an alcoholic, had a problem with drugs. He had went to the VA in the 70s and filed a claim. Nothing happened with that claim. And one of my dad's clients asked me to help him, and my dad helped him. And eventually Tommy got VA disability benefits, but more importantly, he got help and he got clean. And so he got a large back pay award. He was able to buy a house, get treatment, get sober, start a family, and start a business. And he had those skills the entire decade or more that he was under the bridge,
right?
And so, that's really the genesis of it, because everybody who's represented veterans has that same story. And my dad's story just goes back to, he'd been helping veterans for such a long time. And he was just doing it pro bono, because that's what you did back then. And the law prevented lawyers from getting paid. So that was part of his practice, because he was known as a trial lawyer and he was a Vietnam veteran. He just wanted to help. And so I was, I became an infantry. My dad was an infantry officer first too. Then he went JAG. I was an infantry officer that came off active duty and was told I was going to go logistics. But so while I was in the Guard, I went through some tough times. I was going through law school. I was starting to help my dad run the law firm. And I really didn't know anything about business. I'd never taken a business class. And there was one of my commanders, I was telling him, I said, this is so tough. I can't keep up. I'm drowning. I don't know how to do any of this stuff. And this commander said, well, John, I got some good news for you. You don't have to worry about that. You're deploying with your company to Iraq. So my orders are coming. So, but then I came back from Iraq and I still had the same problem. And I had another commander who was a scrum master. I don't know if you're familiar with scrum. Jeff Sutherland, the art of what, doing twice as much in half the time. It talks about the feedback loop. And this guy was a scrum master. And he's like, John, this stuff is actually really easy. It's all basic leadership stuff you learned in the military. If you can do that, you're an officer. Like, you know, NCOs can run huge companies because they have the basic skills. There's really no reason why you can't do this. And so I listened to him, and he talked me through some of my, what I thought were major problems, and they really weren't. They were simple leadership issues that we've all dealt with in the military. And on my journey, I've had one of my previous squad leaders from when I was infantry ended up owning 5 CrossFit gyms and selling them, and then starting a logistics company. And so even, you know, it's not just officers, even at the junior enlisted level, like look at J. Dog Hauling, he was an E4. There are the basic skills to get us there. And I kept seeing that over and over again. So that's what Veteran Led is about, is just empowering veterans, saying, you know what you need to do to get there. You know what that's you right. need to do to be successful. I don't care whether it's a nonprofit or a business, you have the basic skills. Because most importantly, you know how to build a tribe. You know how to build a team. You know how to build something that has a purpose. And you know, for many of our veteran clients, they would get their VA disability benefits. And it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. All of a sudden, they're getting that money. Now what? Now what? I can feed myself. I can take care of my family. Where's my purpose? And so that was my position, because I had a lot of clients come back to us and say, this is awesome. Thank you. They get the big back pay award. The VA is now paying them money every month. They're getting medical treatment and things are good. But then it's like, but what's next? And so, you know, I thought a lot about that. And I thought, well, you have all these skills that our civilian counterparts absolutely lack. This is your opportunity. And it also disgusts me the way society looks down on the veteran community. They should look up at us. We have the skills. We've done it. And you know, we've raised our hand, support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And many people didn't. And it was open to all of us. And those of us that chose to do that showed that we could be committed to something. And so that's why at Very Low, we love to hire veterans, because they understand leadership. They understand how to accomplish a mission. Mission first, people always. Yeah. These are things that, look, like this is easy in the military, but in the civilian world, you forget that most people have never experienced this.
That's right. And I think so many of us who have served, we take some of this stuff for granted. Some of the training that we've had, some of the experiences that we've had, even like you said, on a junior enlisted person, they, you know, when I was in, they told us that you should be expected to be able to do the job of 2 ranks above you, or in some cases more. And so if you're like, oh, I was just an E3 or something like that. Well, okay, well, that E3 at some point may have been expected to do an E5's job at some point. So you probably had, maybe you didn't have all the training and everything that the E5 had. Maybe you didn't go off to, you know, the NCO school or whatever, you know, from each branch. They all have, you know, their own, you know, different training and stuff. But maybe you didn't go through that, but you've had some experience anyways, where you've had people that you had to lead and influence and, you know, get results from, you know, whatever it was that you were doing. And so, you know, even some of the most junior people have these skills. We just don't realize it, because we think, in my opinion, anyways, we got like blinders, like military blinders, where it's just the military that this stuff applies to. But what you're saying, and I think a lot of us can maybe understand, is it doesn't just apply to the military. This applies to all aspects of our life, and especially, you know, in a business sense, it's real easy to apply some of this stuff to the civilian side of things as well. In your opinion, your experience, what aspects of the military training do you think had the most impact on individual growth past the military?
Team building,
yeah. I was going to say it was probably going to be something along those lines, team building, right? Because you don't, like, especially in the military, you don't accomplish anything on your own. It's always a team effort, right? And when you have, you know, a business of one person isn't going to go very far. you're going to have to rely on a team of people. Of, you know, even if you're an entrepreneur and you're starting your business, you know, a solo business, you're going to have to, you know, hire some people, even if they're third party contractors, right? Where you're going to have to have your accounting and your finance and finances and your legal and your marketing and sales and all different things like that. You're going to have to figure out how to get that done. And maybe you're part of that. You're definitely going to be part of it, but you have to have other people who are better, smarter at than you are at some of those other things to be able to, you know, accomplish what it is that you want to do, which is, you know, running a successful business, right?
Well, and Scott, I mean, let's even go back to basic training. What's the first thing you do? You had your buddy team, right? And that buddy was there and you had to lead that buddy. And sometimes your buddy was a superstar. Sometimes your buddy was a dirtbag and you had to carry that buddy. But yeah, the thing is this, right? If you can't lead yourself, you can't lead anybody else. If you can't meet the standards, the individual standards, then you don't even get to be on a buddy team. They're gonna kick you out. They're gonna or maybe get retrained, recycled. But you have to lead yourself. But once you can have the discipline to lead yourself, then you gotta lead a buddy. And then once you can show you can be part of a buddy team, then you may get some leadership positions in basic training.
That's
but
right.
Eventually you get to your line unit or your initial duty station, and now you're part of a team and you have to function as part of a team. And people don't care whether you as the individual fail so long as the team succeeds. And I've known some horrible officers with strong NCOs who make it. And I've known some strong officers with horrible NCOs who fail. And it really comes down to being able to lead that team. And some of it does have to do with luck. Fortunately, in the civilian world, we get to choose our team members. But yes, if I see all these young kids and they want to go out there and they want to be entrepreneurs and run these big companies. And they're not even disciplined enough to lead themselves. So when I talk about team building, I said the first thing is you have to have the discipline to lead yourself, but then you have to be able to build and lead the team, build your tribe. I've noticed that a lot of young leaders want to immediately be in charge of everything. And you know, it's like, hey, if you can't get results on your own, you can't lead a team. And when you have that buddy there, those results should be amplified or magnified. That buddy should be helping you. It shouldn't be 1 + 1 = 2. It should be, you know, 1 + 1 = 56, because you've got a buddy right there who all of a sudden is making you better, right? And you're growing along with them. And you know, I hate hearing from the people who say, well, you know, yeah, I can't really work well with this guy, but man, I could lead a team of 100. I'm like, look, if you can't work well with one person, you aren't in charge of jack shit, and Jack just left town.
That's right.
Nothing.
That's right.
Learn to, you know, it starts with personal accountability, but man, I would just tell you that is key. The key to scaling is to build the team. And to do that, you have to have some humility to say that if I really want to be successful, I need to surround myself with people that are better than me. And I may have a unique ability that I bring to the fight that I can contribute, but I'm foolish if I'm going to build a team of people who I consider to be lesser, I would say less successful or have less potential for success.
Sure.
Because as we develop a team, the team wants to win. And if you're the best at everything, it's never going to happen. You are the constraint. You're the bottleneck. You're the choke point.
And you almost become the competition against those other people if you don't bring them into the circle, right? And then now they're not on your team trying to help you. Now they're off helping other people who may be competitors, right? And that might not be in your best interest. And I think everybody is good at something. They have that core thing that they're really good at, but not everyone is really good at everything. And you want to get people who are really good at those other things that you're not really good at. And you want to bring those people onto your team, right? And I know when we went to Afghanistan, when we were deployed to Afghanistan, we were, you know, trying to get like the best everything for our platoon, for our squad, for our team. Like as we were going over there, it's like, okay, I want the best equipment. I want the best people on my team. I want the best of everything, because we wanted to be successful. We wanted to go out and kick some ass. But you're not going to do that with mediocre, subpar, equipment or team in general, the team makeup that you are going out there with. So we wanted to make sure we had the best of everything, and go out and kick some ass, right? That's the way you do it, is make sure that your team is solid. And that's what you're talking about here is that teamwork. And whether you're the leader or you're an individual contributor, you've been on a team at some point in the military. You know how teams work, and that's why I think taking a step further from the military, even before you even get into the military, that's why I'm a big proponent of, like, for my children, having them play sports, like team sports. You get to know how a team works together, and you get to know how that one weak link, who can't throw a ball or can't catch or can't whatever, you know how that weak link affects the whole team, because that one person could be the difference between you winning a game and losing a game. And so you want to be that team player who's helping those people out to build them up. You don't want to, knock them down, because there's, whether you like it or not, they're on your team, and you want to make sure that that those people are put in positions where they are strong or stronger, and not going to be a detriment to the overall team and the success of the team, right?
Absolutely. I mean, your fragile ego will probably be the thing that, if your team fails, that'll be it, because that's, you're right, too scared to get people who are better than you on the team. Like, look, right now, my chief information officer, she knows more about IT than I will ever know. I am incompetent in her world, right? Same thing for my chief operating officer. He knows more about operations. My CFO knows more about finance than I will ever know. My HRO, she knows everything about HR benefits, all the stuff I don't even want to know about in terms of policies, regulations that just make my head spin, right? My head of marketing, my head of sales, they are all better than me. And I owe the team that. I said, look, we're putting together a championship team. That's it. And I only want the best. And if you join my team, my promise to you is I will continue to hire the best people I can. I will do what I can to pay for them. I'll try to afford them. But this is my biggest investment as a team, because I will tell you from personal lessons learned, there is nothing more expensive than a cheap employee. Not only when you get someone who you don't want to pay, what they say, pay peanuts, get monkeys. But if you don't pay them what they're worth and you can't bring in that real talent, the entire team struggles. And you get the knife hand in here, you the leader, it's your fault because you were too scared to bring in real talent. Maybe you didn't want to pay them. Maybe you were worried they were going to take over and be better than you. But here's the thing. Like, if I have somebody leave and they're good, that's my fault. I didn't build that bigger future for them. I didn't challenge them. And I didn't deliver on my promise. And so for me, I take it personally, not in a bad way, but I'll just tell you, my last chief operating officer, he left. He was, to become the CEO of a company three times the size of ours. That's a good news story. He went from being a staff officer to a commander. I lost him because I couldn't give him that opportunity. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't big enough. I couldn't deliver. So do I hold that against him? No. Is that a failure as a leader? I don't know, maybe, but it's a good news story. Like, I want people who grow into something better. And it's just like, you were an NCO, you had soldiers that you would see them become even better soldiers than you. And you didn't get jealous. You would be proud and say, man, look at that soldier. Now I went up, but I say that with one caveat. I was there for the sea change. I was, my first deployment as a platoon leader in Bosnia, pre 9/11. A lot of the junior enlisted that were coming into the infantry those days were, hey, it was either flip burgers or go to Job Corps or go join the military. And so I would say that the skill sets were different. Then when I transitioned to the National Guard, I got out in the summer of 2000 because Bosnia and Kosovo blew up. And I'm like, oh, well, nothing happened. Like, this was it, right? Like, this was like supposed to be the big thing, and it ended up being a peacekeeping mission. So summer of 2000, I decided I'm going to go to law school. And I stayed in the Guard, and I got tuition assistance. And now 9/11 happens, right? I'm thankful I'm still in the Guard. But then when I deployed as a company commander in 2005, the junior enlisted soldiers in my company had PhDs. These were smart kids. You know, it was an E4 with a PhD trying to pay off school, or there because they want to serve their country. All of a sudden, the junior enlisted just got way smarter. And so, sure, as a commander, you know, I had to up my game because, yeah, I've got an E4 that's smarter than me. You know, the E4 mafia was even stronger then because they were a hell of a lot smarter post 9/11.
And they would take advantage of the smarts, and I found that out as an NCO, you know, all too often that they could outsmart me, and I was not going to best them at their game. So it's like almost like, why bother even trying at that point? But you know, you brought up a point. You know, if you're paying people peanuts and expecting greatness, it's not going to happen, right? You're going to end up losing those people because they're going to find a better opportunity where someone else is going to be willing to pay them more money, and can't fault them for that. I mean, you know, you're going to do the same job one place versus another, and you're getting paid more. Obviously, you're going to go where you're going to get paid more, unless there's, you know, better opportunity at the place for advancement and growth and all that kind of stuff, right? But you really can't fault them for that. And there's a saying, you know, that if you think hiring a professional is expensive, wait until you hire an amateur. And you know, that just goes to talk to the point that you know, you might pay the amateur a whole lot less up front, but the amateur is going to take 10 times longer to get the job done, or it's going to be done wrong and it's going to have to get redone 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and it's just not going to be worth the effort. So it's better off going with the professional, paying them, you know, the rate that they deserve, and going from there, right? But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to skimp on that and think that you're going to get away with getting greatness out of that. You know, it may work for the time being, but it's not going to last too long, right?
No, it is the worst thing you can do. And I mean, I can give you so many examples of, as one of my team members called it, the gift that keeps on giving, where you get somebody and they screw up and you have to deal with those mistakes for years afterwards, right? And so it's the gift that keeps on giving. So if you, it's not like, oh yeah, you might save a little bit of money, but here's where you lose the money. Your frustration and your time in dealing with it, it's going to pull you, the leader, away from your mission and your objectives. And so the growth of the company slows, and your mental health, your well-being, because now you're dealing with somebody who is incompetent, and you have to, or worse, right? And you have to, sure, you have to deal with that, or you have to terminate them. And then you go through the whole head trash of like, oh my gosh, like I'm ruining this person's life, I'm going to fire, they got a family, whatever. When in fact, they're probably miserable working for you because you're not paying them enough anyway, or they weren't qualified to do the job. So now your team is thinking you're incompetent because you didn't hire someone worthy or someone with the right credentials. So you've lost the respect of the team. Long-term, you've lost money because somewhere along the line, you're failing to service your customer. Someone has to pick up the slack for them, and maybe you're, yep, losing customers, or your work product isn't as good. But then, you know, once they exit the organization, you're going to find everything they did wrong. Some of the best advice I got, and this is back in the paper days, so let me take you back about 20 years, but it's like, hey, after you terminate someone, sit at their desk for about an hour and just go through it. And now I say their computer, but you'd be amazed at the stuff that you'll find, and you'll realize like, man, I should have let them go a while back. And then, of course, there's always the conversation where I've had team members that I've hired cheaply and it's not working out, but I don't have the guts to send them on their way because I feel like I have a heart. But it's not that I don't have a heart, it's that I don't have the guts. And then inevitably what happens is they're unhappy and they're like, well, when it comes to termination, like, well, why didn't you do this sooner? You knew I was struggling.
Yeah.
And when I could have given them a recommendation and set them up and sent them off somewhere where they could have been successful, but I knew they weren't going to be successful here for months and I didn't have the guts to pull it off. And, you know, that's one of those things that I regret, you know, as a leader, you know, especially during deployments, you can think of all the mistakes that you made and the impacts that it had on other people's lives. And look, once you're a leader in the community, it's the same way. Those decisions have impacts and you really need to think through those things. You know, should everybody re-enlist? Well, that's what you're pumping through the organization, right? Because everybody cares about recruiting and retention. But you know, I had soldiers that based on what they wanted, what their families wanted, it was a horrible idea for them to re-enlist. But I kept selling it because that's what I was supposed to do as a leader, to pump that recruiting and retention.
Right. And like you said, it's not a good fit for everybody. They might be miserable doing what they're doing, but you're trying to sell it to them and make it seem like, oh, it'll get better. It's almost like a bad relationship where, you know, abusive relationship where you're things will be different next time. Well, no, they won't. It's going to be the same stuff that, you know, the military hasn't changed that much, and it's not going to change just by you reenlisting, you know. You got other life circumstances that you're dealing with as well. And, you know, just look at the overall picture of what this person is dealing with. Just try to figure it out. Like, is this a good fit? And, you know, as you were talking about before with your employee who went off and was very successful, it's like, okay, that's a success story. And that you should be happy about that person is being successful. And if this person who's in the military and is not being successful and they go off and they do great things and they become a success in the civilian world, well, okay, good for that person. You know, let's be happy and celebrate that. Like, this was a part of their life, a part of their background and their training was the military. Served them for the time that they used it, but, you know, it's no longer serving them. So let's celebrate it when they go off and they are successful elsewhere, right?
Yeah, I think that's really important, Scott. The team understands this, because I always say, look, nobody's on the train forever. And, you know, as we grow, I had a great team member that, you know, by the time we hit about 100 employees, he was like, man, I was happy when we were at 10. And he'd been around a long time. And he just, you know, he didn't want to be around anymore. And I had somebody that got off the train when we hit about 20. And so I had a lot of the longtime team members. I can tell you the story of the guy that got off the train when we got to 20, 30, 50. You know, and there was all different reasons. And one guy, he was all about growth, all about growth, all about growth. And then all of a sudden he just said, you know, no, like I want something different now. I'm burned out. I'm tired. But even me, when I find someone who can do this better than me, I'm take it, because the mission is more important than me. And that's how we have to really, really look at it. And let our team members know that too, that, hey, like, it's the mission. It's our service to our clients. And lucky for us, we serve America's heroes. We serve veterans. So it means something to us. And over 30% of our team members right now are veterans. And so they get it. Now, I wish I could say I have 100% veterans, but the truth is, you get the underqualified 04, that major who never should have been a major. You get that, you know, the 15-year E4, right? So not everybody in the military is going to be a superstar on the outside. Right? They're just not. We have dirtbags in the military, but generally speaking, because we know how to build teams and we know how to roll up our sleeves and work, and we understand the importance of our mission, generally speaking, when we hire military, it makes a huge difference. And I figured this out. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember I would either have a company commander or a first sergeant. They could come into a unit, and like within 3 days, they're changing everything. Right? That doesn't work in the civilian world. In the civilian world, you want to bring in someone that has the power of a first sergeant or company commander. It's going to take you 60, 90 days, maybe even a year to fully onboard them and give them all that power. But the reason why it works in the military is because that company commander has already probably been a commander before, or that first sergeant's at least been a platoon sergeant before. And when they come into that new organization, they're not new to the culture. They don't need to learn a whole lot. They already know what they know, and they can come in and start making changes immediately. It doesn't work that way in the civilian world. They have to assimilate to the culture, figure out what's going on. But I run our organization like a battalion. I've got the staff who makes decisions like a battalion staff. Then I have commanders. I have our veterans practice commander, our personal injury practice, our criminal defense commander. These three company commanders run their companies. And the staff does the staff work. And I give them a lot of autonomy. And it's because we have so many veterans on our team that they get it, right? Oh, we have a chain of command. We will follow the chain of command. We understand our importance of our mission. And like I said, we're serving veterans, so we don't want to let our heroes down. And so it's just a different atmosphere. When we can bring in veterans, we can generally get them up to speed to the culture faster. But more importantly, they're usually more bought in on the mission. Now, I don't want to say that we don't have a lot of great military spouses and other team members who have a great affinity for the military, a great respect for the military, but there's something about veterans being plug and play. where you can bring them in and they get the culture and they're already, they know what it means to be all in. And they're just, it's just so refreshing to like not have to explain everything. Now we still have a robust onboarding program, but man, I love bringing someone onto the team and you can tell like day one, they're fired up.
Yeah, and you actually use a phrase I was going to use to describe what you're doing with your firm is plug and play, right? Because you take someone out of the military who is already familiar with the chain of command and the structure and all of that, and you take them and you put them into an organization that's set up similarly to that, you know, as close as you can get it, you know, on the civilian side, and they're going to be like, wow, this feels a whole lot more familiar than what I was expecting, right? Because you get out of the military, sometimes you don't know what to expect. You might feel like you're just being thrown out to the wolves and who knows what, you know, the outcome is going to be of that. And so when you get put into an organization like yours that's set up in a similar format like the military, it probably makes that transition a whole lot easier if they're coming straight from the military, even if they're not. It makes that transition into your company a whole lot easier, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely. And there's some positions, right? Like the JAG lawyers, or, you know, you get it's pretty easy transition, the paralegal. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, I love the 42 alphas, because VA forms and DA forms or DD forms are basically the same thing, right? It's like the same culture, the same forms world, and they can really just get in there and start working. And it's, you know, there's less, I think they have less anxiety. It's like, yeah, I know how to do this. I can do this. And I think for all of us, you know, any new job, any new opportunity, there's a lot of anxiety. But when you show up and there's other veterans there, and you know, and your clients are veterans, it's just, it's so much easier, because we're all worried we're going to make mistakes. We're worried we're not going to fit in. We're worried we're going to say something stupid or look dumb. It doesn't matter. But I'll tell you, one of the things that really took off, and you know, I was never the toy soldier type. I didn't like, and I look, I'm from the spit shine boots and pressed BDUs era. That was when I was a lieutenant. And I hated that. I'm like, I'm not a toy soldier. I'm a warrior, man. I'm like, this is stupid. But we, when we started hiring a lot, we have more Marines right now than any other branch. And we had a Marine that was functioning in a paralegal capacity. And he started showing up wearing a suit every day. And at first, you know, people started making fun of him, especially the Air Force, Army, and Navy guys. You know, they all look like Jake from State Farm and their little polos and khaki pants. You know, they're all giving him crap. But then as a showing of solidarity, you know, all the other Marines started wearing suits. And then the Army guys, you know, were even wearing now blazers, you know, and pants. But all of a sudden, like, performance jumped because they put that uniform on. You know, it's just like the military uniform. Like, once you put this on, you're in uniform. Like, it's go time. Every day is game day. And every day it matters. And every day you're getting better. Every day we train. Training is not something we do. It is what we do. And so it just became like part of the culture. And it was just took one Marine with some guts to say, no, you know what? I'm gonna have a higher standard. And you know, in the military, how infectious that is. Like, hey, I'm an Alpha Company. Like, screw those losers in Bravo Company. They're a bunch of dirtbags. Like, we're Alpha Company. We have better uniforms. We score higher on our PT tests. Like, you know, even in garrison, right? I mean, you can go to the field and I was mechanized, so we can talk about Bradley gunnery and, you know, scoring. And I don't know if you ever got I never got the chance to do EIB. I don't know if you did it, but I mean,
no.
But it was those things, right? Where it's like, we're better than the other battalions. We're better than the other companies. And that's just something in the military. When you have that team, you want to be the best team.
That's right. Yeah, and that's similar to what I was talking about before. It's like you want the best everything. You want the best scores. If you know, weapons qualification, you want the best you know, everything in your company. And so yeah, I could totally see how putting that uniform on, you know, just putting a suit on, and I'm going to work. This is my uniform. When this uniform's on, this is you know, the way I am conducting myself, and I'm going to be professional and blah, 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 right? Versus, you know, wearing the same clothes that you might wear on the weekend, you're going to get maybe a different mindset with that. And that might be a big part of it for some people who might be maybe struggling a little bit with that transition is the mindset piece of it. Just make that simple change and see what happens. And in a way, you know, kind of being the leader and see who follows you. and kind of follows that lead, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that in the military, we know that when someone's doing the right thing to do is to follow. We know what right looks like. And yeah. we have the guts to call it out when it's wrong, when something is illegal, immoral, unethical, right? We know that we don't tolerate that. But the other side of the coin is that when we see excellence, we recognize it and we want to follow it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the integrity piece of it. You want to call out wrong when it's wrong. But you also want to support right when it's right. And you want to make sure that right is given the opportunity to thrive and push forward, right? So I want to talk a little bit about your podcast. So you briefly mentioned it earlier, but Veteran Led is a show. And so its goal really is to inspire veterans to become leaders in the civilian world, which is kind of what we've been talking about here.
Not inspire, just remind, right? Like, I don't need to inspire you, motivate you. Hey, you're a soldier. You took the oath. That oath didn't expire. Get your ass out there and start doing something for your community. You know, build a company, do something great. So I don't want to ever say I inspire. I just hope that I remind.
Okay. Well, you know, that reminder is, I think, important too, because with a lot of things, you start to forget maybe that that you do have those leadership qualities, that you can thrive using those skills that you learned in the military, those leadership skills, a teamwork that you talked about earlier is super important. Knowing what a good team looks like and how it operates. You know, I think discipline is another thing that we learned in the military, and how we, like you said just a minute ago, how we call out when things are right or wrong. And we know what right looks like, we know what wrong looks like, and we can be disciplined in the things that we do. And if we are using those skills and not letting them go to waste, I think we'll be pretty successful, right? So tell us about the show and the types of things that listeners can expect to hear on your show.
Sure. And I guess I want to get to the other part of this is that because it's really important to me. You know, I was fortunate to have two company commands and a battalion command. I've had three soldiers under those commands commit suicide. And I think a lot of it, you know, at least in my mind, you know, what could have been different? And I think what could have been different was the purpose, the camaraderie. Because we get out and it's always seems like when we're alone that the bad things, when the team isn't there, when the tribe isn't there, that we feel the pain. When we're not surrounded by our team, when there's not an important mission. Because I can remember, you know, my deployments, especially in Iraq, it was like, you know, what I didn't like was going back to my air-conditioned can and sitting and having time to think. It just, you know, and that was, you know, that when the excitement dies down and then you come, and I mean, now let me magnify that, you know, 100 times, right? Now all of a sudden the excitement has died down, and you know, you think about it, like, what do you think about when you were deployed when you weren't, you know, when you weren't actively engaged, whether you were on the base or outside the wire, if you were doing something, you're actively engaged. And, you know, but it was like, then all of a sudden you get the soldiers, and I didn't care whether it's, you know, Bosnia or Iraq, whatever, they would come back and they had some downtime and they would start thinking about their families. They'd start thinking about their future. They'd start to get down on themselves. But as soon as you got them back into the mission, they were fine. And it didn't. And sometimes just make them fill sandbags just to do something, because I don't want them sitting around, laying around, or do hip hop training. Because I don't want them to sit around and start, you know, it just seemed like that was like when the bad stuff happened. And I would say it's probably a lot worse. And talking to a lot of the veterans we represent that post-traumatic stress disorder, it's the lack of team and it's the lack of mission and purpose. And once you take that away from someone, and what I think the problem is not so much that's a necessity, but it's a necessity once you've tasted it, once you've lived it, once you've had those brothers and sisters, and once you've had a real mission, when you take it away, you know, it creates this gaping void. It's just a sense of like emptiness. And so, you know, Veteran Led, I'm trying to fill that or remind veterans to fill that. And so I talk about a lot of the lessons that I learned building our company. Look, we made Inc. 5000 list, the fastest growing company in America, 7 years in a row. We did it through using military leadership. But most of the lessons I learned that I used were all stuff I learned as a dumb second lieutenant, where I was as useless as wet toilet paper. My NCOs taught me. They taught me the basic leadership skills, and that's really all you need to know. You don't need to be some, you know, war college brainiac to figure this stuff out. It's pretty simple. And the key is just to use it. You have it. You had it when you enlisted. There are some traits that you had when you enlisted or you were commissioned, but then you grew those when you were around the great non-commissioned officers and officers. So you have that ability in you. It's all there. The basic lessons, I haven't learned anything since probably my first 3 years in the military that have helped. Like, there is nothing new under the sun. All these authors go back and they regurgitate stuff, and it's their own, you know, dribble about whatever, you know, but it's all the same lessons. And the only difference is you live those lessons. You serve. Everybody else is making up a bunch of bullshit that they've never done, talking about leadership. They have no idea what leadership is, right? They don't know. I'm sure leadership was pretty tough from your air-conditioned office over there, where you were back with a bunch of venture capital money that wasn't even your own. And you lost. You lost because you suck. You lost. You know, it's not the market conditions. It's not anything else. It's because you lack the grit and determination and the leadership skills to get there. But, you know, and you know why? Because you weren't a veteran. You didn't raise your hand. You don't know what it means to commit to the team. You don't know what it means to commit to the mission. So don't cry and tell me you know everything about business. You know shit. I mean, that's one perspective.
That's a pretty good perspective too, because you do have to be sort of humble. Like you said, as a second lieutenant, you learn from your NCOs who, you know, if you look at the organizational chart of, you know, the platoon that you were leading, you were at the top, and you were learning from the guys who were under you, and just knowing your place in the whole scheme of things, where some of those NCOs may have had way more years in the military than you did, and they have way more experience than you do. You know, it's possible that, hey, maybe they know something that I don't know, and let's keep my ears open and, listen to what they have to say and observe what they're doing and not be just barking orders because the rank on your uniform says that you can, you know, like that's not the way a good leader is going to, effectively lead their troops. And it's not going to be the way that you effectively lead an organization either. Come the civilian world too. Right. And I can appreciate what you were talking about earlier too, with, basically starting your show, you know, several of the soldiers that you led, taking their lives. And that's obviously a tragedy that we don't want to happen anymore in the military community. It's happening all too often. That's why I started this show, was, you know, several of the guys that I served with took their lives. And I couldn't just sit around waiting for another phone call saying, hey, you know, another guy that I served with is gone. Knowing that, hey, I might be able to help some people. And it's not just helping the guys that I served with. It's the whole military community is having the same type of problem. And so, like you are doing, why not put some good information out there and help people, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have a duty to give back. I mean, all those lessons we learned, that is what has made us successful. It was those NCOs that gave us the training, the officers who mentored us. Like, how are we giving back if we're not getting the message out to veterans? And look, get your VA disability benefits, get your treatment, and don't be afraid, and don't be ashamed, don't be embarrassed. You know, it's so sad that mostly the spouses are coming saying, hey, can you help? Because he won't ask for help, or she won't ask for help. And, you know, and it's like, hey, you know, they got to be the client. We want to help them, but you earned it. You know,
that's
you
right.
Earned it. Blood and sweat and tears. You absolutely earned it. And, you know, and I know some people, you know, you talk to the infantry guys and say, you know what? Yeah, but I had a buddy, you know, lost a leg. Like, I don't deserve anything. And then you got, you know, guys like me who went from the tip of the spear to in the rear of the guard. I mean, I was a rep, right? You know what rep means? Rear echelon motherfucker, right?
And that's right.
I was active duty infantry. And I'm on my deployment in Bosnia. You know, we start bombing Kosovo. Things are heating up. We got National Guard guys on. I was at Camp Demi, you know. We're making fun of them, right? It's like, you know. And so, and the logisticians, we made fun of them because, you know, hey, we're infantry. We got the blue cord. Like, what do you have? You have nothing. right?
That's right.
You have to support us. And so that was that attitude. And, you know, so I learned a lot of humility from being, you know, in the rear with the gear. But, you know, a lot of those are logisticians and, you know, our reserve component team members. I mean, when it came to what's happened over the last 20 years of those deployments, I mean, it was, you know, in serving both, I would say, you know, just as good. The reserve component became just as good. And in fact, I had a guy that was when I ran the warrant officer commissioning program. I was the battalion commander of that. And I had a guy that was, he was like the number one engineering company commander in Iraq. And he was a National Guard guy. Now, as a civilian, he ran a nuclear power plant. So that probably helped. Like, he was a sure. genius. But the point is, you know, it doesn't really matter where you serve. You learn the lessons. Like, and I don't care, you know, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Air Force, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, Air Force. It's all the same, right? You learn the same basic skills. We have different acronyms and we love to make fun of each other, but in the end, we all have the same basic skills. And, you know, if you're struggling, the benefits are there for you, but you got to go get them. And you have to be able to, it's just like me. Hey, I had to take off my crossed rifles. You know, sometimes we don't want to ask for things, but you know, asking for help is a sign of strength. And I don't care whether it's because you need disability benefits, you need to feed your family, you have mental health issues. You know, asking for help is courage. And you know what? It seems like, you know, as officers, we hate to ask for help. Because our NCOs make fun of us anyway, but you know, asking for help is the only way you're ever going to get better. And I've just learned, to suck it up, to, you know, don't worry about your pride, right? You can have your pride later, but if you need help, you ask for help. And I don't care what it is. Maybe your relationship isn't going well. You know what? There's 30 other veterans that you could probably think of right now who have suffered the same relationship problems that you have.
That's right.
There's probably another 30 that you know that are on the other side of that and can help you. So why not reach out to your fellow veterans? But I've learned that in business as well. I'll go to a conference and I've got these problems that are just the weight of the world. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I've got all these problems. And then I'll run into like 20 guys there have the exact same problem. And then another 50 who've already solved that problem. And the veteran community is no different. We all have challenges, but we have this vast resource of leaders who can help us. So why aren't we reaching out? And I just, you know, I think that we just, you know, Scott, I appreciate what you do and continue to pound that message. You know, and that's obviously right. you've written your book and you've gone in deep about your loss. And you know, it's, I don't know any veteran who hasn't lost somebody or something. But yeah. I would focus on the game. Focus on the brothers and sisters you have, the experience you have, the opportunity that you have. Man, you have so, we've lost some, but we have gained so much more through our military service.
That's right. Yeah, we've gained a hell of a lot through that. And yeah, there's some loss in there. You know, some of it really heavy kind of weighs on us, right? But when things get a little bit too heavy, ask for help, right? I mean, if you're trying to move a refrigerator, you're not going to do it by yourself, right? You're going to go ask for help, and no one's going to be like, oh, look at that, you know, wuss, he can't do that. Like, nobody can. So, like, yeah, you're going to have to ask for help at some point, right? And so I think, to your point, some of the stuff, whether you think it should be or not, it's going to be too heavy, and you're going to have to ask somebody for help. Now, one of the things that maybe a lot of the listeners are not familiar with is the fact that, so you're talking a lot about, you know, how you guys help veterans through your law firm. They may not be familiar with getting a lawyer involved with their disability claims or other things like that. Could you tell us some of the stuff that you guys do to help out the veterans in the cases that you guys work with?
Yeah, I mean, veterans don't need any help filing the claims, right? That it's pretty simple. You go to your local VA regional office, your county veteran service officer, they can help you file the claim. Where we get involved is where veterans are unjustly denied their benefits or they're not rated fairly. And the reason why this happens, if you think, now you gotta remember, my dad was doing this in the Vietnam era, and so and he was doing a lot of it pro bono. And the law changed in 2007. And I think one of the reasons why it changed is that nobody expected OIF an OEF to go on that long. I mean, we're in Iraq and Afghanistan for, you know, almost 20 years. And of course, then the withdrawal map, that withdrawal from Afghanistan is a whole other issue. But sure. My point is this. My point is nobody, the VA could not have predicted that we would have this many service members as veterans. And no one predicted that we would have this great technological advancements, like the up-armored Humvee, the MRAP, the steel pot, the Kevlar, the ACH, to the helmets were always improving. The IBA, right, was better than the flak vest I had in Bosnia. There was just, we created better gear, life-saving gear, but then we had an increase in traumatic brain injuries and other things. And so, the VA has not been able to keep up. And there are some great people that work at the VA that want to help veterans. But anytime you have a very large bureaucracy, it's very difficult to move quickly and nimbly. And so it gets behind the times. But also, who's looking out for the person? And the one thing I really, this is where, my own personal feelings, but, when I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States as an officer, I didn't realize that I would be taking it again, a similar oath as a lawyer. And, my job is no longer to, go overseas, but to protect the one person and protect their constitutional rights, right? And so whether it's someone's been injured and they're being taken advantage by their insurance company, and they're not being, we pay insurance our whole lives and then they don't pay out, or someone who's been falsely accused, or a veteran who has earned those benefits, who we have promised those benefits, and they get denied, that's where we step in. But there are a lot of great service organizations who can help them file the claims, but we take the claims. If a veteran's been denied, we'll take it all the way up through the federal court system. And there's every state and territory has a regional office, some have multiple, and then there's the Board of Veterans Appeals in DC, the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, then it goes up to the federal circuit, and then the United States Supreme Court. And what happens is a veteran may have, Like a lot of us that served infantry, and were you airborne?
No.
Okay, well, lucky for you, but
I was a leg.
Okay. So as you probably know, you jump out of planes or long ruck marches. Now all of a sudden you got problems. Your back, your hips, your legs, your shoulders, and the VA may say, oh, that's great, 10% for tinnitus, right? And so it's like, yeah, but what about the rest of the stuff? And so then you have the right to appeal those decisions. And most veterans don't understand that they can't appeal. They just get a bunch of paperwork. You're like, what's this? It's like, oh, paper. Like, what are we going to do with this? And right. So they don't understand they can get paid, that they can appeal, and they can bring on a lawyer. And most of the lawyers work on a contingency basis, which means we don't get paid unless you win. Unless the veteran wins, we don't get paid. So it doesn't cost the veteran any money up front. But they're looking, these decisions are made based on case law and the Code of Federal Regulations and other things that maybe veterans don't want to look into. Of course, you always have the barracks lawyer. But the thing is, for a lot of veterans, they're just like, I'm tired of fighting. And we say, hey, that's no problem. We'll fight alongside you. Let us keep the battle going for you. You've already filed the claim. You've already submitted the evidence. Let us help. And sometimes we just have to go to veterans and say, look, the VA, I've had Vietnam veterans say, the VA says I wasn't in Vietnam because, my DD-215 was jacked up. I never got a DD-215, whatever. And they're heartbroken, right? And we're like, okay, let's go raid the attic. Let's get photos. Let's get letters. Let's get statements from, buddy statements from people you serve with. Let's talk to family members who suffered that year that you were in Vietnam. It's just crazy, some of the stuff that you see. And it's, hey, look, if it's not documented, right, it didn't happen. So sometimes we got to find the documentation, do the research, look at some of the unit history, and put our clients there, right? Because I will tell you that the amazing thing is, I've been doing this for about 20 years now, meeting the heroes and hearing the stories, it's phenomenal. And back when I started doing this 20 years ago, helping my dad when we were doing this pro bono, World War II veterans, just wow, these guys were. The amazing stories, but also you see the light in their eyes and you see like the hope you can tell. These are warriors. Yeah. And if we haven't been taking care of our warriors, what does that say about us as a society? So, I'm really honored to do it. But like I said, what I love is that for veterans, they should, if they can file the claim and get 100% on their own the first time, great. But if they've been denied, we're happy to help. And, usually what happens is just the evidence isn't good. I had two guys, they're like, hey, wait a minute. We were in the same battles. We walked the same streets in Iraq. How come he's at 100% and I'm at 50%? We've got very similar injuries. And so I'm like, well, he had better evidence. Or sometimes his diagnosis is more severe than yours. But there's a lot of misconceptions in the veteran community that, why does this person rate it higher? Well, every disability rating goes 0 to 100%. And you've probably heard of the VA math where, if you're 50% for PTSD and, let's say 40% for pick your injury, right? Shoulder injuries, and then like 10% for hearing loss. Well, guess what? That's not 100%.
It doesn't add up right. Yeah. It boggles people's minds when they do that, like just the basic math. Even a grunt can do that. If we can figure out that kind of math, right? But then when you look at it and it comes up to something different, and we're scratching our heads. I did a whole episode on just trying to figure out the VA math and what goes into it and everything like that. It's kind of crazy, how it works. It makes sense once when you understand it, but if you don't understand it, your mind's going to be going haywire trying to figure it out. So absolutely. If folks out there, if you have had claims get denied, or you feel like you're underrated, or anything along those lines, definitely reach out to get legal representation to make sure that you're getting the benefits that you deserve. And I know a lot of times guys out there, they don't even want to apply for the benefits because they feel like they're taking away from somebody else who maybe is worse off than they are, and they deserve it more than me, so I'll let them have it. Well, that's not how it works, right? It works where if you're qualified for it and you have all the evidence, like you mentioned, and everything checks out, you should be getting those benefits, and the money will be available whether you've applied to it for it or not. Like you'll get that money. They'll get that money available when it's there. So you're not taking away from somebody else. It's not like the VA has this cap of how much they can give out in disability benefits each year. So definitely apply for it. You've earned it, like you said, and definitely deserve it as well. So for the folks who are out there who are interested in finding out more about getting some sort of legal representation for their cases, where can people go to find out more about your legal services and also to find your podcast?
Yeah, so our website is PTSDlawyers.com, as in post-traumatic stress disorder. So PTSDlawyers.com. We actually do have a disability calculator on the site. It's not perfect, but it's we're improving it every day. You can't get all the claims in there, but it works. So PTSDlawyers.com, and then everything veteran-led. Every podcast, veteran-led podcast, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast, you'll find veteran-led.
Awesome. And I'll have links to all of those in the show notes too for the listeners. Definitely go check out the podcast and subscribe to that. Follow it all over the place on social media, all that kind of stuff. But most importantly, I think check out the legal services. If you've been, you feel like you've been wrongly denied your claim, or you're underrated, or any number of things along those lines, check that out. Because I'm sure there are ways that, like you said, you can raid the attic for, photos and, other things that can support your evidence that maybe you just didn't think about. And having a team of experienced lawyers on your side will help you be more successful than just going it alone and filing the claim on your own. Right. So, definitely check that out. And again, the link to, that website will be in the show notes. So check that out there. Before we wrap up, I like to end each episode with a little bit of humor. And I think this segment might be up your alley, especially given what it is that you do professionally. But the segment is what I like to call, Is It Service Connected? And it's sort of like America's Funniest Home Videos, a military edition. We watch, kind of a quick, funny video, and we kind of laugh about it and, kind of joke about whether or not whatever happened in that video would be service connected. Just a fun way to end the episode. A lot of times some of these episodes can be a little bit heavy, so we like to end it with a little bit of humor and a laugh, sometimes at the expense of some of these service members in these videos. For the audio only podcast listeners, I'll do my best to describe the video, but your best bet is go check out the video on YouTube or Twitter, X, whatever they call it now, and check it out there so you can actually see the video and share in the laughter at the misfortune of this poor soul who we're about to catch on this video right now. All right, so I got the video up here. We'll give it a quick watch here, and it looks like, for the audio listeners, looks like a soldier standing out kind of in the desert, got a shoulder fired something or other, kind of like an AT-4, probably not an AT-4, it's something else. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but let's check it out and see what happens.
A little sympathetic detonation there.
Standing there, and then he fires it, and the thing goes flying behind him, and he gets knocked on his ass. Looks like he's holding his face as he's walking away. Definitely was a significant blast coming off of that thing, and he clearly was not trained well enough to be firing that live fire style. You know, he definitely needed a little more training on that than whatever it was that he had. But it looks like he got his bell rung a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, that look, that's service connected. Now, you may say, well, wait a minute, if he's that stupid to be firing it that way, then it's a pre-existing condition, right? But if it's made worse, hey, if you have a pre-existing condition that's made worse by military service, then absolutely you can be service connected for it. Now, that being said, the real standard, and I don't want to like blow up your whole plan here, but I believe it's whether it's willful or persistent misconduct. If it's not, then it's service connected. And my argument is always, well, wait a minute, if we're on duty 24/7, right, because you heard that several times,
sure,
and they quote us 24/7, then how can it not always be service connected? Because if they own us, then they also owe us leadership, and someone should be supervising us and making sure we're not doing stupid things, right? Isn't that the function of leadership? So if there's a failure, then in my mind, well, it's not willful or persistent misconduct. And in fact, look, have you ever met Joe? Have you ever met the 18-year-old private? Like, he doesn't know. So where are we as leaders when these things are happening? So I look back and say, well, let's look at the leadership. What are they doing to help? But I have had a lot of these. I'll just tell you, this is the thing that blows me away. It happens all the time. Outside of base, come back from a deployment, what does every male soldier get? A Harley Davidson, right? And inevitably, they crash it. They lay it down. And I've had the VA come back and say, well, let me just break it down for you. Negligence is not willful or persistent misconduct. If he's speeding and gets in a crash, that can be service connected. Okay, and so I've had the VA come back and say, well, you know, he's in a motorcycle, 2 a.m, you know, and we think he might have been speeding, even though there's been no like accident reconstruction that we're aware of. And it's like, no. On duty, unless you can show willful or persistent misconduct, it doesn't count. But I always say, so what? That's why we have leaders in the military. If you want to put someone on duty 24/7, you provide them leadership 24/7. So the leaders, when that happens, the leaders fail. You know, I think I saw one where a guy was, legs open, and someone was throwing a boot trying to, you know, get him in the groin.
Yep.
Seen that game. And, my question is, where's the leaders, right? Like, come on. Like, we're going to deny this guy service connection because his leaders failed to, I mean, especially if they're in the barracks, come on. But anyway, that's the legal standard is willful or persistent misconduct. But if you're on base firing a weapon system and you do it stupidly, you should be service connected.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, like you said, that's on the leadership to make sure that you know how to fire that in a safe manner, go through all the training, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. Right. If you're not getting the proper training, then how should you be expected to fire it in a safe manner? So absolutely 100%. I think that should be service connected. Hopefully he wasn't too injured off of that, but you never know. And these things creep up down the line. So one thing
his buddies probably made fun of him for 2 years. So, you know, and that's the guy that was Once you screw up, everybody knows forever. Everybody knows forever.
They're still making fun of them for it. It's not 2 years. There's no expiration date on that. They're still getting them. One thing I always say with these videos is at least they have it on video. So, you know, that there's your evidence right there of what happened. So, John, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, sharing, what it is that you do and how we can apply these leadership skills, teamwork, discipline, all these different things that we've gathered throughout our time in the military and how we can apply that to our civilian lives. And thank you for how you're continuing to serve veterans through your legal services and also through your podcast to help remind people of what it is that they have to offer and what it is that they learned while serving in the military. So thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for your very important mission. I listen to it and I love hearing the different people who just want to help their fellow veterans. And I think that's key to keep spreading the word. We are out there. We all want to help our brothers and sisters.
That's right. Absolutely. 100%. I think we just get, sometimes folks just get too much in their own head that, no, I'll handle this on my own. I can handle this. I can do this. We're out there. We want to help. We want to see other veterans succeed and be successful. But like we were saying earlier, a lot of times it's going to take a team, and you got to have the right team members on board. So thanks again for taking the time to join us and reminding us of that fact. Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.